Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahulastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Clapham Grand. Please welcome a man who's been solo parenting and has amazingly still got 2 kids. It's Richard Herring! Hooray! Oh, thank you very much. Oh, you shit all over last week's audience. My God, those guys. Those guys. Where do we get them from? Who bust them in? Welcome... Whoa! It's all right. It's difficult to remember how to move. It's all a bit slapstick for the listeners at home. Nearly fell over my chair. Welcome to Richard Herring's Losers Shall Triumph podcast. It's we've got together a load of losers in the audience. One of them's going to win, and that one will lose because he won't be a loser anymore. Ah, it's like that episode of Star Trek with the computer. Confounding... I can't understand that dichotomy. Though I was talking to the inventor of Quattro the other day, Ian Quattro. He invented, come on kids, the Quattro. You must remember the Quattro soft drink from 1982 to 1989. It was pineapple, orange, passion fruit and grapefruit. Those were the 4 constituents came together to make Quattro. I was also talking to Annabelle Jankel and Rocky Morton, who created the famous TV ad campaign for the Quattro. I'll remember that. It's harder than it looks. Peter Kay makes this look easy. Much harder than it looks. Quattro, you remember Quattro? Well, were you born in 1989? Were you still alive in 1989? Oh, looking good. Anyway, they call it Rahulastapas. I don't know if that'll catch on, because Quattro can't catch on, what's going to catch on? That's my question to you.
I used to get that from the garage in Cheddar. No, okay, quite true. Don't remember quite true. So, yeah, I've been ill for a couple of weeks, and my wife finally got the thing I had and was much worse. And so I had to, I went to Cheddar to see my parents. We hadn't seen them for 18 months, but my wife couldn't come. It's almost like she did it on purpose. She got like a nice holiday from the kids, didn't have to spend any time with my mum and dad. So I've been looking after the kids on their own. I've been to a couple of birthday parties with them. My son got obsessed with this little fireman's box thing. It had fireman's stuff in it, but it was like a red box with a plastic box with a clasp. And he played with it in the bath and he caught his willy in it. So I was quite worried about it. And I thought, he said he was just going about his willy hurting. And I sort of went to bed that night thinking he's going to just... He's going to have his willy amputated. My wife will be in. That's quite a responsibility in it to keep her. It'd be a bad thing to lose. And then we went to a birthday party. My son will find the most dangerous thing anyway. I can't believe he's never been to hospital. We went to a birthday party and this friend there had quite a big garden. And my son was playing on some swings. And like 2 minutes later, I looked for him and he wasn't there. He'd gone right to the end of the garden, through a nettle patch, found a chest of drawers the guy kept his tools in that he said was so stiff that the kids couldn't open the drawers, and found in those drawers a screwdriver and a saw that looked genuinely like it had come from a Japanese martial arts. It was like it had sort of blades all over it, and he was walking down the garden holding these. Later on, he took all his clothes off. He had his if his willy had come off then... Imagine that on Bouncy Castle. So I've managed to survive. In Cheddar, I took my kids down to see my old school and just walked around Cheddar, but it was pissing down with rain, so I bought them a biscuit, and we sat in what used to be the bus shelter that was right by the school. There's a little bit of sheltering there. And when they ate their biscuits and just the wafting smell of the shit of someone from Cheddar who hasn't got their own toilet. And that's a real kind of Cheddar... As a holiday experience, and it's sitting with your dad wet through from rain, eating a biscuit with the smell of excrement. That's when you know you've been on holiday. That reminded me of being on holiday. But that bus shelter was that used to be a bus shelter, and I remembered like when I was 16, that night I first met my first girlfriend, first started going out with my first girlfriend, we'd sat in front of that bus shelter while my friends were in the bus shelter shouting us and saying how, you know, going, ooh, it's because we were sitting together. I thought, God, if I could have seen, you know, if I that 16-year-old boy could have seen the future and realised that bus shelter was going to be a toilet one day, I think people used it as a toilet back then in the 1980s as well, but not officially. But, you know, that's the thing. You go back to these places and you start thinking of the old days. And yeah, sad, isn't it? So my ear's all right, isn't it? My ear's got better from last week. Remember my ear hurt last week? Anyway, my guest this week, he's probably best known for playing the arch bidder in Filthy Rich and Cat Flap. That's quite a good one, isn't it? That's quite generous of me to go for something like that. That's quite interesting. Will you please welcome me, ladies and gentlemen? It's David Baddiel. My dad calls him David Baddiel. My dad calls him that. Hello, David Baddiel.
Hello, everybody. Thank you very much. Thank you. Oh, it's quite nice to be on stage. Fucking hell.
You're back on stage.
I'm back on stage. Yeah. Can you believe it?
I can't believe it.
And not dead. It's unbelievable. Hello, Richard. How's the thing with the one bollock? How's that going?
It's going all right, thank you.
Yeah, is this the nearest as a Jew I'll ever get to sitting down with Hitler? That's sure great. Yeah. I don't know if that's true. Is it true that he only had one? Yeah.
It isn't true, I don't think.
Has
think
it made you more anti-Semitic being...
I couldn't be any more anti-Semitic than I am. I've read your book and it's made me... Yeah. No, it hasn't. It's
made
brilliant.
You more like Hitler. That's good.
I had the moustache as well, David. Don't think I didn't think of that. I had the moustache.
But that's not the right sort of moustache, is
but
it?
But I had it before. I had the Hitler moustache.
Yeah, you did have a little Hitler moustache. Yeah. Can I just... I was listening to the bit of... I'm going to call it new material. I don't know if it was.
Yeah, well,
that
it is.
You did before I came on. That was, yeah. Anyway, it reminded me of a story I used to tell, but I did say before I came on that I haven't been on stage for a long time, so if I get confused and forget bits like a shit person who can't tell a story, I apologise. But it did remind me of something about my son. So my son is now 16, and he's a hulking great man. Do you know... I mean, this is not relevant to the story, but the other day, a Belarusian journalist, or a Lithuanian... No, Belarusian journalist was taken off a plane. They got a plane to come and take his plane down, and then they took the Belarusian journalist off the plane. And when I look at my son, I think, you're the kind of bloke now who would have come on that plane and kidnapped that journalist. That's what he looks like now. Okay. He's fucking terrifying, right? Okay. But when he was about four, we had it's sort of a Jewish quandary in a way, in that my son didn't get circumcised when he was... If you're a religious Jew, or I wasn't really from a religious Jewish family, but nonetheless, my parents had me circumcised when I was 8 days old. I had no fucking say in it. Someone called a moyle, that's their job, yep. Right? A sort of rabbinical man, looks probably a bit like you in some ways, came to our house and cut a bit of my penis off, right? And that was that. But when my son was born, I wasn't sure whether I wanted to do that, really, because I'm very unreligious. And in the end, I just sort of, like, didn't bother. And then God, in whom I don't believe, clearly thought, no, fuck that. David Baddiel, he's King Jew. And when he was about 4 years old, he had started having problems weeing. Through his foreskin was too tight. Yeah. And we had to have it, you know, cut off, like, surgically, okay? He'll hate me for saying all this, but never mind, right? You know, it's his fault for being born to someone who needs funny stories. So this is what happened, right? So we were very worried in general about that area for a bit and making sure that it was all fine. And then he got what was left of his penis caught in... Not left of his penis, but his foreskin. caught in the zip of his little trousers at one point, right? And he was in a lot of pain and we were really worried about this. There's a completely true story... And we didn't know what to do. And Morwenna, who is my wife, said to me, Google it. And I said, and this was, remember, this was about 10 years ago or whatever, so it was very current then, this problem. I said, I can't. I am a British male celebrity over the age of 45. I cannot Google the words child's penis, right? I may as well just phone up U-Tree now and hand myself in. So we just had to hope that got better. And it did. Yeah. So it's all fine
and
now.
And he's still just trapped in his little shorts down to this day.
Yeah. So yeah. There's two child's penis stories.
Yeah, well, they nearly got circumcision with caught in a little snapping box.
Well, so what are you doing there?
That was a box. You had this little box.
No, it's not a guillotine, I don't think.
It was sort of a guillotine.
It's not like one of those stationary things that sort it out. No. Now, I believe that there is actually a ritual knife for doing it that the moyle has, but I don't want to think about that, because that's awful. No, when my son had it, he had it done, you know, by a surgeon and not in a strange way that you've just mimed.
Well, mine was with a fireman's box. That's what he caught his in.
A fireman's box.
Anyway, do you remember being in Filthy Rich and Cat Flap? Have I talked to you about this before?
I don't know if you have. I've done this show a few times. And so we were discussing beforehand that because we're old men, we may forget what we talked about and do it again. And people who have regularly listened to Richard Herring's podcast, who are those people who regularly listen? But nonetheless, they might spot that.
Yeah.
And so you clearly thought, what is the one thing so obscure about David Baddiel's career we haven't talked about it? So does anyone here know what Filthy Rich and Cat Flap is?
100%.
Oh, good. All right, well, Ben Elton's in. That's good to know. So after The Young Ones, Ben Elton and Rick Mayall and all those people wrote another show, which wasn't anything like as successful as The Young Ones, called Filthy Rich and Cat Flap, about a sort of old showbiz guy that Rick Mayall was playing. And I was originally offered quite a big part in that, and then gradually the part went down and down and down. And the final thing, which you can still see on YouTube, is it's an episode in which it's a sort of satire about the modern art world. And Adrian Edmondson, who plays more or less the same kind of part he did in The Young Ones, a sort of like complete lout, right? He... at one point, he's taken up by Stephen Fry. I don't know, this is really a long story, but I'm sorry, it's his fault. Okay, so he, at one point, burps, and Stephen Fry tries to sell his burp as an art object to the various sort of arty poncy people in the room, one of whom is me, and I say £350, and then I get into a fight with someone.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. That's the end of the story. I wish you hadn't fucking queued it up.
Wasn't it? Did you watch The Young Ones? And were you into The Young Ones?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can't tell. Well, it is interesting, but not that funny. It's really bleak about what actually happened with that, with the filming of that. So yeah. I'll tell you, just because this is a comedy nerds podcast, all right? But the story doesn't end particularly well.
Great.
Good. Okay. So I was doing a show in Edinburgh at the time. Yeah. It was called Super Lads, and it was sort of, a thing about, ironically, being a lad, which very much became part of my fucking life later on. But I got seen by the people making The Young Ones follow-up, and they offered me originally quite a big part of a pavement artist in this show, and then that got cut, and it got cut, and whatever. So eventually they say, right, you can have this tiny little part, which I was still very excited as this person who bids on the burp, yeah? Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I was doing a show at the Bloomsbury Theatre at the time, like a tiny little show at the Bloomsbury Theatre. And so I had to, like, get up to Manchester where they were filming it myself. And I was still living with my mum and dad, right? And I'd never been on an internal flight in Britain or anything like that. And what they said was, is a cab will arrive in the morning with your tickets, because this was well before you could get tickets with phones or anything like that, and you get the flight to Manchester and do it, right? So I wake up really early, really nervous. The cab just doesn't arrive. Some fuck up. I don't know what. Doesn't arrive. I just have a number where they're filming it, and a bloke, basically a janitor, says to me, I don't know, mate, get on a plane and come, right? That is what he said that. So I had no money at all, right? Yeah. Just like a student. And I went to Heathrow and I wrote a cheque that I kind of knew was going to bounce, right? To get to fly to Manchester. I get there. I'm 3 hours late by the time I get there. And I have lunch with Rick Mayall and Ben Elton and Adrian Emerson, and they fucking hate me. They looked at me like, who is this fucking Oxbridge cunt, right, who's kept us waiting for like 4 hours? And I couldn't really explain. And they were all my heroes. It was the worst experience, right? Yeah. So I do the scene, and the scene kind of goes all right. But then I remember going up to the producer, Paul Jackson, who is very important in the growth of alternative comedy early on in the history of it. I go up to him. He's trying to film. He's directing it as well. And I tap him on the shoulder, and I say, Paul, I need some money back. It cost me like £200 to get here. I don't know if that, I'll get an overdraft and I'm really, it's going to be shit. And he just said, go away. And I thought that was the end of my career. I thought, go away. I thought, that's it. I'll never be in showbiz again. And I showed them. Actually, I did bump into him about, I don't know, 2 years ago. And I said, you still owe me that £200. And he said, go away.
Go away.
So there you go.
You did very well to get there, David.
What, in that story?
Get to the A, you got through the whole story with that, and it made sense. It was good, so well done. First time back on stage. But you got there to the gig.
I did get there.
They should have given you money back.
Yeah, they did.
I'm glad Filthy Rich and Cat Flop didn't do very well now.
Yeah. Ask me another question.
I will. I'm going to ask something else. So, you tweeted the other day about, obviously, as we record this, we're coming up to the Euros, as it goes out. Yeah. With the Euro, England might be out of the Euros by now when this goes out.
When is this going out?
I don't know, but a few weeks time.
Right. They might have won it.
Might have won the Euros. Well, I'll talk to you about that in a second. But you said there were people outside your house singing Three Lions, and you wondered whether you should go and join it.
Yeah, that is something that really happened. Actually, because as you may know about me, I never lie about anything. So I was sitting in my house. It was quite late at night. And suddenly I hear, slightly distant, but outside the window, about six people go, he's coming home, he's coming home, he's coming, football's coming home. And they're doing it like people do, really quite a lot, like on and on and on. And I thought, oh, shall I go out? Right? Shall I open the window or actually go out the door and say, it's me, right? And then I thought, there's quite a strong possibility, isn't there, that they'll think, who's that sad old bloke? Like, he's joining in and he seems to know all the words, but otherwise this is just weird. What's he doing? Right? So in the end, while I was thinking all those sort of self-loathing, it's going to be shit thoughts, they went away.
Aww.
Obviously, as they might do. But then, because obviously I did talk about it on Twitter, I got a lot of interesting similar experiences sent to me. And someone sent this to me, which was, it wasn't him himself, but someone screenshotted Mike Batt. Do you know who Mike Batt is?
Yeah.
So Mike Batt wrote the Wombles theme, right? And he tweeted in 2018 that he was on the tube coming home to Wimbledon. He lives in fucking Wimbledon, right? how brilliant. And he said, I'm coming home to Wimbledon. And as the tube came into Wimbledon, the people opposite me started going, underground, overground, right? And Mike Batt said, I thought about saying, I'm Mike Batt, but they would definitely have had no fucking idea. Without the suit, they'd have had no idea who that was.
And probably not know who the Wombles were either.
No, possibly not.
You know, it's a long time ago.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it is true, without being too self-deprecating, that quite a lot of people know about footballs coming home, but probably don't have any sense that it was written by... Now, some people obviously do know, but... I'll tell you one thing. Kids, so I write kids' books, and kids really love footballs coming home. You know, it's a really big deal for them.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I've... I was going to say gone into schools. That sounds weird, doesn't it? But when I've gone into schools to read to children, fucking hell. It's another thing about like the yew tree thing. But anyway, when I've gone into schools to read to children, I sometimes say, oh, I'm also the person who wrote Football's Coming Home. And they can't quite process it.
Right.
It sort of feels like, but that's a completely different world. So I think that I genuinely wonder if those people would have known.
I think they would. It's the kind of thing Bill Murray's supposed to do all the time. Is it Bill Murray? I saw a story about Bill Murray. Someone was eating a pizza and Bill Murray grabbed their pizza and ate it and then said to them, no one's going to believe you. But he joins in a lot and does stuff like that by being Bill, which, you know, would be so amazing to
happen, that's fantastic.
I mean, everyone knows who Bill Murray is, though, I think.
No, younger people might not.
No, maybe not.
I don't know. I mean, partly...
Imagine if that happened, you didn't know who it was. A man just goes, no one's going to believe
that an old man ate my pizza. Of course they will. I mean, I think it's probably a lot based on memes now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because, like, if you think, oh, yeah, that's the bloke from that meme, which Bill Murray must be in loads of them, guess, you know, then you get it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know what the young people know and don't know, Richard.
I don't know. And now, my question about Three Lions, which we won't talk about anymore, apart from this, is, are you prepared and do you have lyrics written and ready to go if England win the Euros? Because you've got to go, it has come home. I'll do it for you. It has come home.
Yeah, and we've got to do the arithmetic. We've got to do the arithmetic, which I don't even know what it is. What is the arithmetic? If we had to rewrite it...
Well, are we taking... I've seen you debate this question as well. Are we taking it from 1966, in which case it was 30 years, or are we taking it from 1968 or 70?
Well, sorry, we should probably explain this, and it is probably really boring for anyone who's not interested in football. But originally, the lyrics of Three Lions are... But when we wrote it in 1996, 30 years of hurt, which was back to 66. Now, someone today on Twitter... was it you? Someone today on Twitter said, as a pedantry thing, that the hurt didn't start till 1970, when England went out of the 1970 World Cup. But I then pointed out that we came fucking third in the Euros in 1968. So that is at least 28 years of hurt.
Yeah.
And then someone else said that we lost to Yugoslavia or something in 1967. So it's 29 years of hurt. So it might as well round it up to 30 by that time. But... I if it's now, I can't even work it out. 58?
55, I think.
Is it 55?
I think it's five more years.
Yeah, but that's slightly dependent on whether you call it Euro 2020 or Euro 2021. Because there's this weird conceptual science fiction thing that we're actually doing Euro 2020.
I think you still have to count the year.
You
I don't think you can say. And if that year didn't count, we're all inside.
It sort of didn't count. It's like, you know, a weird year where nothing happened. All right, so it's 55.
Yeah, 55 years of hurt, and now the bandage has been applied. The plaster of us winning 1-0
in
a penalty shootout.
Yeah, that's the lyrics, exactly.
I'll help you out if you like.
Actually, I don't know if it will work. I don't know if it'll work. I mean, you can help me out and you can release it. But Three Lions is a song about yearning and longing, and really a song about mainly failing. That's one of the things about it as a song, and the reason I think it managed to be to chime with football fans is that up to the point at which me and Frank wrote that song, most England songs were about we're going to win it this time more than any other time. No, fuck off, you're going to lose, right? And you did, Ron Greenwood. You lost, right? And so did all of the teams that went to those tournaments singing, we're going to win, hey, 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 right? So the whole point of Three Lions was, because we were sort of real football fans, was like, let's write a song about how we're probably going to lose, but sort of think we might win anyway. And that's really the sort of, you know, feeling of Three Lions. And I don't know how it would work to write a song about we've won.
No. We, it has come home, it has come home. It, look, there it is. It is.
Football's come home. Yeah, no, it works. Okay. Undeniably.
In 2026, you can do 30 years of 30 years of hurt. You can do a song, 30 years of 30 years of hurt.
That doesn't work. Why not call it 60? Why not call it 60? What do you mean 30 years of 30 years?
It's 30 years since you did 30 years of hurt, so it's 30 years of 30 years of hurt.
Have you not heard of arithmetic?
It isn't 30 years of 30 years.
Yeah, stop saying it.
30 years of 30 years of hurt. Didn't stop us releasing the song every time it was a football match.
You know, we don't release it anymore. We released a different version in 1998, which I don't like as much. I don't think it's as good. And also, it's got the phrase Gazza, good as before, in the lyrics, and he didn't fucking get picked for that tournament. So that was a bit awkward, I think. Glenn Hoddle said, no, he's not coming, for various reasons that I think we know. After that, we haven't rewritten it. And it just gets downloaded or it gets bought or whatever. Yeah. And people always say to me, are you going to write a new one? No, that would just be terrible.
Write 30 years of 30 years
30
of
years of 30, 30 years.
They'll
of
love it. People 30 will years love of hurt. Yeah. And then after another 30 years, 30 years of 30 years of 30 years of hurt.
Yeah, but I'll be dead then.
Just record it now.
Okay, all right. Yeah, for my children. Yeah. For the David Baddiel estate.
And actually, there was one more thing about it in that you tweeted about Darren Anderson humming the song during the second half.
Well, that was really sweet, I thought. It was really sweet. Is that so? Darren Anderson, who played for England in 1996, he there was a big piece in The Guardian, and he was interviewed for it, and he said that it's really interesting, actually, that you normally, as an England player, are quite nervous playing for England, and it's quite a pressurised experience. But that when we played Holland, who we beat 4-1, that in the second half, he just thought, this is brilliant, I'm just enjoying myself, and he started humming the song while he was playing. And I put this on Twitter, and someone said, I'm surprised he didn't injure his larynx. Which is a joke about how much Darren Anderson got injured. Thank you for that applause, football knowledgeable man. But I tweeted that although it was a lovely thing, I was slightly worried that, you know, if he'd carried on humming it throughout the tournament, that later on he might have thought, oh, God, if I hadn't spent so long humming the chorus and trying to get the chorus right, I wouldn't have hit the post. I'd have got that golden goal, right? Which would have been marvellous, because if anyone remembers, Darren Anderson hitting the post against Germany is up there for me with Gazza missing that 2 inches thing. Yeah. That would have been... That was an amazing extra... Sorry, now I'm getting too football-y. But that extra time, if anyone does remember it, against Germany, obviously we lost and it was painful, but it was at a time when, you know, UEFA were playing this golden goal rule, which means, like, it's a schoolboy thing. It's like first goal wins, right, in extra time. And they stopped doing it because they thought... This is actually quite a moving thing, I think. They thought, and I think it proved to be right, that teams eventually just played incredibly defensively because they were really worried, we're too worried about the goal. But in that particular half hour, they played both sides unbelievably attacking football. And I remember reading a newspaper article saying that both teams played as if they had nothing to lose the way they do in dreams. And I remember being incredibly moved by that.
Yeah. It'd be better if we'd won, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it'd be fucking better. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. It would have been.
Do you know? You know that? Sorry, this is, sorry. Just we should leave Three Lives, but obviously the tournament is about to start. So something you may know, but something you may not know, is that the Germans nicked the song afterwards. The Germans decided the song was theirs, and I don't wish to be xenophobic, but that is so fucking German, isn't it? It's like, we have won the tournament, we will have the song. It just seems to me like unbelievably, you know, like German. Like why not, right? Yeah. And even though the song's all about England, you cunts, but nonetheless, they've decided it's theirs. So they sing it at football matches or whatever. And actually, me and Frank were asked by the Germans, again with no sense that it might be painful for us, to go and sing the song at German Sports Personality of the Year. Right? Which is even more painful than our Sports Personality of the Year, which is quite a painful show. And so we did, but when we got there, we insisted on wearing 1966 replica red shirts. And the director said, take those off. And we said, no, we're not going to take them off. So we sung the song on German Sports Night of the Year wearing those shirts. And Uwe Seeler was in the audience, who played for Germany at the time, and he registered an official complaint. So there we go.
It's as bad as wearing swastikas to wear to in Germany. Yeah. You can't wear swastikas or an England shirt. Yeah. I'm gonna ask you to come to... I can't believe you went to Germany to sing our song.
We thought it'd be a laugh.
Well, it's a,
it was.
I can't believe you would sell out like that. Sell out Three Lines.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
So look, you were halfway through a tour when lockdown happened. So you'd done three stand-up shows since you sort of came back to stand-up.
Yeah.
All along the, well, the titular theme.
Yeah.
Of,
Not the
Fame, Not the Musical, My Family, Not the Sitcom, Trolls, Not the Dolls, which is the only one I haven't seen, which
right.
I was planning to come and see, but then...
Well, it will be on.
Got in the way.
It will be on second half of the tour. I mean, it's a really, really weird thing. I don't know if you were... Were you touring when...
No, I was just doing more of these, and then we lost some of these in London, but yeah, that was the only gig.
Right.
We lost.
Well, I have to say, it's weird. I'm hoping it's going to be all right, but obviously no one's had this experience. I won't be the only comedian who's had it, but of being halfway through a show, which was going well. I was really enjoying it. It felt very current in March 2020.
Yeah.
And now I've put it in the freezer and got to bring it out again in September. And, I mean, some of the jokes aren't going to work. I mean, there's 10 minutes about fucking Trump, and I'm not sure that's going to work as well, because I think he's not as current as he was then. I mean, the question is, and this is literally a sort of thing I haven't worked out yet, is that material was working really well. So do I still try it, saying, hey, do you remember this guy? Right? Doing a whole thing about, like, oh, well, that happened.
Yeah.
Or do I have to just cut it, and I don't know yet.
It becomes like nostalgic. It's Peter Kay. Who remembers Donald Trump? Who remembers that? Anyone remember that guy? What was that about? hair orange. He was all orange. What was going on?
Like, anyway, like you did with Quattro,
yeah, exactly.
Just before I came on.
Yeah, that's what you did do.
I don't remember Quattro, by the way.
No, no one remembers it. That's my problem. The things I remember, no one remembers. Sure. That's why it's very, you know, remembering stuff is harder than you think, Dave.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember things that people think they've forgotten but haven't forgotten.
It used to be the case that that was a thing in comedy, and then that became a bit of a bad thing to do in comedy, to just come on and say, who remembers Spangles? That became like, you don't do that because that's shit. Yeah, but you, so you were doing an ironic version of that, were you, with Quattro?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't understand. Right. My pleading over my whoosh, whoosh.
My other one was, who remembers 9/11? Come on, who remember those planes? What was that all about? Whose idea was that? Oh, no, I'm not doing
exactly
that
like Spangles.
That's
isn't
my,
it?
That's my old material. So, the premise of this show is the Trolls one is about that is you
it's about internet rage and madness you, and you know, people getting angry and really furious on social media. And it's to some extent also you know, a diary of my life through my Twitter feed, and actually it's not completely anti social media. It's sort of about my love-hate relationship with it and my own addiction to it, and the fact that you get fucking mental shit and then you get really entertaining stuff. And I do believe that it still exists in that space somewhere between, you know, oh my god, it's full of the worst people in the world and the angriest people in the world. And I do believe that we have an issue whereby outrage, I talked about this actually in my last show, that outrage creates identity. One reason why people are so angry is that it's sort of not a marketplace of ideas, Twitter. It's a marketplace of identity. And one way you can say, this is who I am, is to be really angry in opposition to someone who's not like you, right?
Yeah.
And that, as a result of that, we've got this kind of binary, absurd culture war. At the same time, fucking hilarious stuff's on it as well that I think is really entertaining and funny. And I can't really do any of it here because the way that I do it in the show is with a screen.
Yeah.
And I did think, oh, what if I explained it? And then I thought, that'll be shit, right? So really you just need to come and see it because virtually every gag in that show comes off sort of showing something that's happened on my Twitter feed.
But it's interesting because people say, you know, as you've said, people say don't feed the trolls, but you have a policy of replying once and getting out.
Well, I did. I sort of stopped doing that. I mean, there's enough to give me material because my basic position was these are hecklers, right? That basically, when it first started, that Twitter or whatever social media, but particularly Twitter, was not just a space in which people would be lovely, but people would basically call you a complete wanker out of nowhere. That's an experience that everyone's had as a comedian, right? Yeah. And you don't ignore it, you try and make it funny. Yeah. So it's really like an abusive person just shouting at you out of the dark and you try and make it funny. So I would screenshot it and then try and say something funny about it. And then if it was funny, then people would like that, just like they do in a club. But then after a while, and there's lots of that in the show, but then after a while I stopped doing it because I did think some of these people aren't even fucking real, are they? They're just like weird troll farm people who are getting really angry for reasons that I don't even understand. And that seems to be less of a joy in putting them down as
maybe
a heckling.
I mean, I don't know how much that's true. People talk about that sort of stuff. I mean, I think there's a lot of people. I think the problem is a lot of the people who do it are deeply troubled and unhappy, and this is, you know, they're striking out in a way to just make themselves feel better, or they feel envious of what they imagine you are a lot of the time, I think.
Yeah.
And so they think you need to be taken down, or, you know, they've got an image of you.
Yeah, as entitled.
I used to join in and try and be funny or being rude to them or retweet them. And then what I've started doing recently is to try and just be nice to them and say, look, you know, I don't know what's going on in your life that makes you want to do this, but I'm absolutely, whenever you want to just have a chat, I'm here. If you want to have a chat and talk about
it. And have any of them said, I want to have a chat and come round to your house?
What happened? The last time I did it to the guy, went, no, shut up, you know, fuck off. And seriously, you know, if you, I don't mind what you've said, I don't care about any of it, but if you want to.
And then
you
did, know, he some point, did he cry?
In the end, he came back to me about 2 months later and said, oh, man, I was sorry to hear about you having cancer and stuff, and I hope I didn't add. I made a joke about it, but he sort of did. He took the wind out of his sails just by being like, I'm not saying I'm Jesus. But it's what Jesus would have done in this situation.
If Jesus had had
but
one
I was more successful because it worked and it solved the problems.
Jesus didn't work? Is that what you're saying? No.
It didn't really work out, did it? Everyone's fighting over whether he's, you know, his blood's really blood or wine or whatever, and it's... No one's doing that about you. No one's saying they're saying, just saying Richard, he's made it clear his blood.
Did you think for a second, right? It'll be a long, long bait and switch. So I will say to this person who's really being horrible to me, look, I don't know what's going on in your life, but if you want everyone to talk about it, that's fine. He's like, well, fucking, I hate you. No, really, it's all fine, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And 2 months later, he comes to you and he says, look, I'm really sorry about that. And I'm really sorry you got cancer. And you say, you cunt. did you think about that?
I didn't.
Oh, that's a shame.
Because it's also the International Men's Day thing that I did for years and then I stopped doing. You know, it was passive aggressive. It was fun and it was taking the piss out of people being stupid. But then on International Men's Day last year, I asked people to just be positive about men. I just said, let's use it. Rather than on International Women's Day going, why aren't the men covered when they are? Why don't we just tweet something nice about a good guy in your life? And loads of people did it. And I thought, this is a much nicer thing to do. Even though the point I was making was valid and good and funny.
Yeah.
And this isn't at all funny.
No.
This is a much nicer way to spread the news about internet. And it's, you know, and that's... So you can still use Twitter and social media for what it was... When it did start, Twitter was actually a lovely place to be.
Interesting, and this isn't really meant to be a joke, right? It'll sound but you've had half a bollock off at your International Men's Day guy. That is sort of a weird poetry in that, isn't there? Don't you think?
I've got a foot in both camps now. I mean, you've got to be careful.
Have you? Got that as well?
Because, like, one half...
Have you had some problem with your legs?
One half. I'm half a man and half not a man.
Right. No, but that's exactly what I'm not saying.
Yeah.
Right? Because as I thought about doing virtually that joke, I thought, I do not want to say, particularly to you or anyone else who's had problems with their testicles, that it makes them less of a man.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you were the face of International Men's Day stuff.
Yeah.
And then your manhood, for want of a better word, did get corrupted.
I do want to I'm going to write a lot about this, obviously, and I'm going to write about that. Why, you know, it's crazy that would be associated with masculinity when it's the weakest fucking part of anybody's body, the external part of anyone's body.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is true. I mean, this is like not, you know, original observational comedy.
No.
But it is amazing how much you are vulnerable in your testicle area.
Yes.
I mean, and people still laugh about it. Like, any time on a football match, when a player goes down because they've been hit in the bollocks, the commentator's still a bit, oh, he'll feel that in a minute, oh, blah, blah, blah. No, it really fucking hurts. Yeah. Don't make fun of it, Glenn Hoddle, right? That's what I always think, because it is extraordinarily vulnerable, isn't it?
Yeah. But equally, it's interesting with all the discussion about gender and everything, that you don't become a different person by losing any of that stuff, you know. So it's
someone went whoa over there. You know, whether you're America, that would be a huge round of applause, but still not okay.
But
fair
you don't
enough.
Become a, you know, so it's not, and it's sort of insulting.
It's fine. Don't patronise him, really.
It's insulting to anyone who's had an accident or had a medical thing to sort of go, oh, you know, this is you're still the person you are, and that's
yeah,
what's
of course.
So you know, it does make you realise.
But did you at any point think in like late at night magical thinking way, I shouldn't have done all that Men's Day stuff because that's somehow or other what's led to this.
Well, everything, because I did a show about Cox, I did a show about Hitler.
Yes, all that, yeah.
I did a show
I'm a big man thing that you've done.
Everything led to this. So, well, I just thought it makes it ironically amusing and, you know, I do sort of find it mainly amusing even though it's happened to me.
Yeah.
So, like, all the way through I've just been thinking, there's hardly been a moment where I haven't found it funny. Because it just is sort of like, have all the people this could happen to.
You're the funniest one it could happen to.
Absolutely,
I'm trying to think of someone funnier, but I don't know if there is. Yeah. Oh, maybe that squirrel that had enormous bollocks on Bake Off. But that would be harsh on the squirrel for that to happen.
It's still a squirrel.
Yeah, it's a lovely squirrel.
I feel I deserve it.
No, yeah, you deserve it. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. One thing I was going to say about trolls, and I really don't want to talk through any of the bits in the show because they will be shit, I think, without seeing the screen. But one thing, one bit I have in the show is about how comedy on social media, on Twitter, is often not recognised as such.
Yeah.
And it is a new form, and so you think it's quite... I mean, so not comedy, I mean Twitter. And trying to do jokes on it is therefore revealing. Because I have a whole section where I say, here are some jokes I did, and here are some people who didn't get them, right? Yeah. So, for example, and so this is just painting a picture that will be funnier if you see it, but... Rod Stewart put out a picture of himself in a dressing gown with a birthday cake and smiling at camera. And I retweeted that picture and I said something like, it's lovely how this care home has done all this for this old lady's birthday. And someone underneath wrote, looks like Rod Stewart. And that's... I've got thousands of things like that. Yeah. Thousands of where people just haven't... Like, why would I say that? Like, why would I, out of nowhere, choose this old woman to say that about?
It's sort of astonishing that when people know you're a comedian. That's something, you know, 90% of my Twitter feed is jokes.
Yeah.
And but people who follow you, who presumably know that you're a comedian, will just suddenly take something incredibly seriously.
Yeah.
That you're going, what? At what point did you... So, you know, if you, that's the irony and everything. And it sort of dies, doesn't it? Because it's, someone will take it seriously.
It sort of went a bit viral at the start of the pandemic. It was a bloke doing a thing you've probably seen many times, someone on telly and their child comes in while they're on a live thing and it's all really sweet and adorable and whatever. And there was one in which a bloke turned round and said, just fuck off, get out of here, you fucking little twat. Fuck off, you cunt, right? And that went a bit viral. And I saw, I think it was Carol Malone, the journalist, say, this is awful. Doesn't this person know, you know, that they're broadcasting or whatever? And I said, she said, it's just unbelievable. And I said, yes, it is unbelievable, Carol, because it's my brother. Right? It's my brother, and it's fucking obviously a joke. Yeah. But if you go and see that, it's very funny. It's very funny. Either my brother just set it up. So many people were taken in by it. Yeah. So many people genuinely thought that that went out without any apology. It doesn't cut back to the woman talking to him saying, that's terrible, I'm so sorry. It just carries on, and they still thought it was real.
Yeah, well, you know, if we needed any evidence, it sort of proves that most people in the world are stupid, but I think...
Yeah.
I think the world's already shown that with what's happening. Hey, look, we should talk about your book and your new book before we go. It's absolutely excellent. It's not that funny.
It's got some jokes
There's
in
some
it,
jokes in it.
There's some jokes in it. I the other day, I because, you know, authors do this. I'm sure you do it. I checked its position in the Amazon charts. It's got a lot of... Amazon do this weird thing of saying your book is number one in various different charts. So my book has been number one in constitutional law, and I don't even know what that fucking is. Right? No idea. But this book, Jews Don't Count Well. So at the moment, it's number three in Jewish history, right? And all the... Thank you. And all the other books in Jewish history, number one is called Inside the Nazi Party, right? Number two is Man's Search for Meaning, which has a picture of Auschwitz on it. And then the other one is called something like, you know, I don't know, We All Died. So I did say at number three, I think mine has at least got the most gags in it, which it does. It does have some actual jokes in it, but it is, on the whole, a serious polemic. Yeah.
Well, it's great. It's sort of about, you know, pointing out the hypocrisy and racism of people who claim to be woke, I suppose, more, which is quite an interesting...
Yeah, sort of. I mean, what it is, it's about identity politics and about the fact that we live in a time where people are very focused on identity and on concerns of minorities in a very good way, I think, most of the time. But that, in my opinion, that has left out or continually downgrades anti-Semitism as a concern. Yeah. I could read a bit from it that perhaps might give you that idea. So... It isn't a particularly funny bit.
Okay.
But it does give the idea about what it's about. So I start the book with a series of examples of what I would say are, moments that would be considered certainly microaggressions or maybe macroaggressions against any other minority, but for some reason are not thought of towards Jews. Sometimes you hear what I'm talking about out loud. The major BBC current affairs show, the one that sets the news agenda every morning, is the Today programme on Radio 4. It's a must-listen for those interested in politics and a must-react to. If something controversial is said on Today, Twitter is set alight and the conversation explodes. On the 13th of March 2019, the American pollster John Zogby was on. At one point, he began talking about fissures in the Democratic Party, specifically around the then new Congresswoman Ilhan Omar's views about Israel and its supporters in the US. The interviewer, Justin Webb, who is a regular on Today, said in response, "If the party decided to say to its supporters, look, we think anti-Semitism is a bit like the way some of our people might regard anti-white racism, that actually it's a different order of racism. It's not as important. It's still bad, but it's not as important as some other forms of racism. What impact do you think that might have?" It was a strange moment. It felt less like a question and more like a helpful suggestion. Maybe this would be a way forward for the Democrats, was the tone. Webb did not qualify or contextualise it. He did not preface or add, obviously, this is offensive to say, but perhaps it's what most people in the party actually think. His tone was neutral. Zogby moved on without really answering. But even if he had, it was the question itself I was struck by. I remember listening and thinking, blimey, it's rare that someone just comes out with it. Anti-Semitism is a second-class racism. I thought it would create controversy. I thought there would be an intense reaction. There wasn't. Well, that's not true. There was a bit. After I managed, followed much fiddling about with BBC sounds and recording devices on my computer, to record the question and post it on Twitter with a sense of my amazement. Even then, there wasn't much online noise, and what there was came mainly from Jews. So actually, when I say, sometimes you hear it out loud, what I really heard was the silence. And that sort of sums it up, really.
Yeah.
Is that... thank you. Thank you. That saying that about any other minority,
yeah,
you know, this doesn't really matter, does it? Why not use that? So why don't the Democrats just adopt that as a formal political position? We think this isn't a very important form of discrimination. It'd be fucking outrage, wouldn't
there? Yeah.
But literally, like, nothing. And the book begins with a number of different examples of that. And actually, it's been totally brilliant in general. I mean, obviously, I've had some racist pushback, obviously. But mainly, it's been a lot of people who the book is aimed at, I guess people with progressive politics, have said, I've read this, and you know what, it's really challenged me, and I'm really going to think about it, and whatever. I've also had a lot of Jews saying, oh, you know, we've sort of been saying this for a while, but no one's put it in a bite-sized package like this before. But the third thing that's been really fucking interesting is the amount of Jews who have said, I have spent my whole life being ashamed of being Jewish, never telling anyone about it, frightened of mentioning it, being told by my grandparents, don't tell anyone because I was a Holocaust survivor and you, blah, 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 and I never mentioned it and now I will. I will. I've read your book and I'm going to try and mention it. And that's not just older people, it's also quite young people who say, and this is the most interesting thing, I'm at Sheffield University or whatever, I have these woke conversations all the time. I'm in a space where everyone wants to talk about identity and minority, and not just racism, you know, sexism, you know, anti-disabled, whatever it might be, different types of identity. And it's all really vital and important. If I mention anti-Semitism, they look at me like, what? How is that important? And then people are, and they say, sometimes I hear people being anti-Semitic and I'm too frightened to mention it because it feels illegitimate to them. Like I got a long text, heartbreaking, from this young guy called Noah, saying, I've always felt I can't mention it because they'll just think I'm a twat for trying to include that in their important conversations. And he said he's read it and now he's going to change. So that feels to me like something important that
it's
done.
I think it is. It's, you know, but it's interesting that there's a few comedians who've written books that really sum up an issue, I think. Mae Martin's written a great book about gender and, you know, and trans issues and stuff like that.
And you've written a book about International Men's Day.
I've written a great book about International Men's Day. But it's, you know, but it's interesting that comedians are doing it and actually getting to the, you know, obviously using humour as a way of helping people get to the nub of an argument. But it's sort of strange that it's falling to comedians to to it, because this book is, you know, there are funny things in there, but it is just a proper analysis of the situation, which does put it out. If you, you know, if you're one of those Labour guys who go, no, of course I'm not racist. If you read it, of course I'm not anti-Semitic or whatever, then you go, okay, I understand why someone would see that is anti-Semitic, because the tropes, the reason that they're arguing that Jewish people don't count is because they believe
that Jews are powerful and privileged and don't need the separate protections afforded to other minorities, and that is a racist myth about Jews.
Yeah, so they somehow believe that Jewish people are in charge of the world while still being an underclass in the world as well. So they're falling for these centuries old tropes of way, you know, the fact that devil is traditionally been portrayed as a Jewish character, and it's so ingrained, and it's sort of astonishing.
It's one of the things that I mentioned in the book is the use of the word Jew. Now, my Twitter biography is just one word, Jew, and that isn't because I'm religious. I'm not. I'm an atheist. But I always thought, it's one of the things is I mention all these comedians, British comedians who are Jewish, and they're all comedians I really admire, but actually I think most people wouldn't know they were Jewish. I'm one of very few British Jewish comedians, British Jewish people who are in the media who has made being Jewish part of their identity. And that is also about Jewish shame. It's also about Jews thinking, I don't know if I really want to talk about this or whatever. So one of the things I talk about in the book with that is the weird energy around the word Jew, around the fact that people write to me sometimes and say, oh, should I say Jewish person? Should I say Jew or Jewish? In fact, Phil Wang was writing a book. I love Phil Wang, and I'm not criticising him in any way, because I thought that interesting that he did this, but he's writing a novel with a Jewish person. He wrote to me, like I'm the fucking touchstone of it. Like I know everything about it. Is it all right if I call them a Jew, or should I call them a Jewish person, or whatever? And what I quote is, because it is amazing, the energy, the bad energy that surrounds the word, is I wrote a novel, again, quite a serious novel, called The Secret Purposes, which is about my granddad, who was a refugee from Nazism, got interned on the Isle of Man in the Second World War. Something that people generally don't know about, again, because Jews don't count, is that all German refugee Jews in Britain, most of them were interned as enemy aliens on the Isle of Man in the Second World War. And that happened to my dad. My granddad. And I wrote a novel based on that, in which a translator goes there and interviews people to find out what's happening in the war, because British government was suppressing information at the time about the Holocaust, right? And she translates a Nazi, because there were Nazis there as well, using the word "you didn't." And she says that means Jewess, right, in English. Literally, it means Jewess. But then she says that my character, that doesn't feel right, because she said it so contemptuously. How do I get the contempt? And then she says, Jewish women, no, that's not right. And then she realises the way to do it is to say Jew women. That the way you get a Nazi saying the word "you didn't" in English is to translate it as Jew women. And no other word in the English language works like this. Jewish boy, Jew boy. Jewish banker, Jew banker. Listen how it changes, moral colour as I lose the ish. It's really extraordinary. And that's because the word is deeply buried in toxic, what I'm going to call structural racism, in Judeo-Christian culture. Centuries and centuries of centuries of Jew being associated with evil. But that's why I put it on my Twitter feed, because in my tiny way, I am trying to reclaim it.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, it's a really, it's a really great book. I listened to the audio book and also bought the book. So you got two. If you sold more than two copies, It's not all me.
No.
So it's a great. Well, again, I really love being able to hear the author, and especially when it's a comedian, reading the book.
I think that even though it's a mainly serious book, and your point about May Martin's book and your book, something to do with it, I think, might be, is that short books in which you're trying to put forward like an argument about something have a stand-up quality to them, even if they're not all about funny.
Yeah.
So, because someone wrote to me, an academic, a Jewish academic, and said, I really like your book. I wouldn't be able to write it in that voice. And she's right, because she's an academic, whereas I have a sort of voice that I've honed through years of stand-up, and it's still there, even if I'm not doing jokes about my child's penis getting caught in a zip when he was three.
Yes.
I think.
It's true. But it's something, and it's a quick read, it's a quick listen.
Yeah.
You know, and it really kind of gets... I think also writing a short book, you have to get the argument so succinct. That's what I found. It was sort of harder than writing a long book in a way, because you have to really...
So what is the argument of your men's
book? It's about toxic masculinity and why men are asking that question and why men are feeling challenged it was a little bit of a journey for me as well to seeing the other side in that situation as well and where we progress and why men shouldn't be afraid of feminism and why it actually helps most men as well.
Yeah.
So it's once you find that journey and you find the argument to have to get it down to the brass tacks of it is very interesting. It is quite a controversial book. You do at one point say that Beau Selector is a very funny programme and that I don't know whether I'm surprised
in
that
a very
hasn't...
particular context I say that, but still, yeah.
So apart from that. But it's interesting that point's interesting that Lee Francis has apologised for all the black characters, but he did a character of you, which was...
He did a character of me as a grotesque Jew, which he's not apologised for. But, I mean, you know, I'm not asking for that.
No.
I'm just pointing out discrepancies.
Well, because, you know, and I've seen this even in having you, in mentioning you on Twitter, that people will keep coming back to the stuff in fantasy football where you did the Jason Lee stuff. And I said, read David's book because he addresses that. No way! I'm going to read the book.
Address it over and over again.
Yeah, you
and
address
it. It's all right. I'm fine to address it over and over again.
But it's this weird. That's a weird thing. I think in your book, you're not calling for anyone to be, you know, castigated or cancelled for this sort of stuff.
No, definitely not.
But also, it's this idea that, because with my book a little bit, people said, Rich Herring used to do jokes about women and now he's saying he's a feminist, which are not. I think the jokes I did before were largely okay, but also I'm not really, you know, going, oh, look at me, I'm a great feminist, I'm sort of discussing the issues. But surely that's what you want, right? If you're saying, I don't want a racist society, someone going, oh, I made a mistake, is better than them going, I didn't make a mistake, and furthermore, I'm going to come out and do the thing again.
Yeah.
So, you know, when someone's done something, it sort of seems weird that people are going back 20 years with anyone.
Because Twitter, in particular, not that specifically, but in general... I think that what Twitter has proved is that the great thrill of the internet, which we thought perhaps when it started would be momentary fame or pornography or whatever it is, has turned out to be telling people off.
Yeah.
Like, telling people off is a really big fucking thrill on the internet, right? And I think some of that has been good. You know, some people need telling off and that's good. But I also think understanding and mercy and redemption are part of, you know, the good things in life.
Yeah.
And that they're going.
Well, and learning and and moving on and changing, you know. So, like, everyone will have had things. And that's what I can't... Because so many people are anonymous on there, but you could just go, well, let's look back at what you said when you were 18.
Yeah. You're being Jesus again, aren't you? You're doing Cast the First Stone.
Well, if you look back at my teenage diary, you would definitely find some stuff that I would be in trouble for.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I don't think that anymore, and I've learnt. And
someone said on Twitter that if Jesus came back today and said that thing about casting the first stone on Twitter, then someone else would say, oh, right, so you're in favour of stone throwing, are you, in general? Which I think is true.
Yeah.
People would say that.
Yeah. Well, look, it's great.
We've got a bit serious, haven't we?
We have, but that's allowed.
There were quite a lot of laughs to begin with, then we got serious. Yeah. But it seemed to be all right.
It was okay.
They seemed to go with it.
I can ask you a silly question at the end, and then that will change it all around. It's, you know, there's room to be serious in this podcast.
Okay.
You know, there's a little bit of room, and then... You have to shut that down and say something stupid.
Are you looking
stupid
on your phone for a silly question?
I've got new questions.
Can't you just think of a silly question?
I want to give you one of my new... I want to try out my new...
What's happened
question
to you that you have to look at your phone?
Because I've written new ones and I want to try them out.
Yeah, but can't you just like think of the first silly question that comes into your head?
You don't understand how difficult this is to come up with. this amazing...
All right.
You can't just come up with a question like this. Some of these are just very rough drafts. You okay. can't come up with this question off the top of your head.
All right.
Would you rather have a conversation with a dolphin or an elephant? You can't right. You can't come up with that off the top of your head.
You certainly can. would I rather have a conversation with a dolphin or an elephant? I think probably a dolphin, because when dolphins speak to you, right, they just go click, 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 right? And you could work that out with Morse code and all that.
Yeah.
But, because I assume that's what it is. It's Morse code, isn't it? I assume that's what it is. And I assume it's mainly, can I have some fish? I don't know. But it might be more interesting than that.
Yeah.
And also, aren't they quite sexual dolphins? So they might be interested in that. So that would be good. I believe they are, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. But why would you be interested in having sex with a dolphin?
I'm interested in having sex with anything my age. But an elephant, much as I like elephants, it's a really loud... I don't know if you know this. It's a really loud palping noise that they make. It's like... And after a while, that would get hard to listen to.
Wouldn't you like to ask an elephant what it's like having a crazy trunk?
I'd like to ask what it's like having a very long memory. Because I don't know if you know, they've got that as well. And why are you scared of mice? I would say that as well.
There's an elephant out there writing a book that stereotypes about elephants.
Yes, that I've fallen into. Yeah,
I don't have a long memory. I don't even remember you saying that. That's how short my memory is.
And I'm certainly not standing like this because of a mouse.
Okay, that one's not going to be in the book. This one is going to be in the book, though. Would you rather have the ability to produce honey from a special honey stomach?
Honey stomach?
Yeah, so it's in your stomach and you just sick up the...
Yeah, like a bee.
Yeah, or be able to make a pearl in your gallbladder every 10 years.
Is that what an oyster does?
No.
Okay.
That doesn't have a gallbladder. You would sick the honey up through your mouth, producing 10 kilograms of honey per year.
Yeah.
I'm going to make that per month.
Okay.
Which you could eat or sell to unsuspecting members of the public.
Yeah.
Each pearl would be worth $8,000 US, but you'd have to pass it with your urine through your urethra.
It's definitely the fucking honey. Yeah. I mean, definitely. I mean, for a start, passing anything through my urethra, apart from urine or sperm, is a bad idea, I think. I mean, I've never had it.
If it's worth $8,000 US.
You see, I think you're thinking about me in the stereotype there. You're thinking he'll take any pain through his uncircumcised urethra for that pearl. That's what you're thinking. So, no, I don't want the pearl. It'd just be awful. Well, how quickly does it come out, the pearl?
As quickly as a gallstone would come. It's difficult to pass and it's painful, but then 8,000
pounds. My worry is, who is going to actually buy that and wear it round their neck when it's been up my cock?
There would be some people.
Would there?
That would add extra value. David Baddiel's cock
pearls. They're all round here. It's a weird pearl necklace thing. So I don't want that. No, okay. I want the honey, but I'm not sure who would eat the honey as well. This has been pointed out before, I think, but I mean, honey coming out of my cock, I don't think people would want either to spread on their toast in the morning. But it is kind of weird that, how does it come out of bees? Is it vomit? You've given up on this.
I haven't looked into it. There's some, it comes out somehow.
Okay, but it's weird that if it is insect vomit, that we're all right with that in the morning and we think that's nice.
So if your sperm tasted like honey, David, people would put it on their breasts. That's what I'm telling you.
Would they?
They would. They definitely would.
Okay, well, that's the answer. I'd like it in jars and sold at farm shops.
I suppose Marmite sort of like... If Marmite
can I make candles out of it as well? Because people make candles out of beeswax and they stuff. Do.
Yeah, if you like.
I'd have to be doing a lot of... Am I wanking for this honey?
No, you're the one who's made the honey come out of your cock, mate. I'm saying it's coming out of your mouth, out of your honey stomach. You're the one who's decided you want honey coming out of your cock.
The pearls coming out of my cock. The honey's coming out of my mouth. Like,
I'm sorry.
I got confused.
Very normal. I've got one more.
What have you done with your glasses? You look about 70.
My reading glasses.
Okay.
There's a good one here, hold on. Oh, yeah. Would you rather go on a cruise with Tom Cruise or a walking holiday with Christopher Walken? Hooray.
Okay, well, that's a very good one. I wouldn't want to go on a cruise with anyone because I believe they are COVID hell holes.
Right.
So outdoors, you know, mask free with Christopher Walken, even though he might shoot me, because I believe he's quite like that.
Well, he shoots himself. That's the thing with him.
Well, that'll be all right. That'll be quite an interesting moment in our ramble with Christopher Walken. He does an amazing version in The Simpsons of Goodnight Moon. Have you ever heard it?
Oh, yeah.
Goodnight Moon. Goodnight Moon. He goes, anyway, that's it. That's my Christopher Walken impression. Can you do one? It's one of those impressions that people can do.
I can't. He's a very good dancer, isn't he, Christopher?
Very good dancer. That'd be good for the walking.
Yeah.
The Christopher Walken.
I mean, he'd be definitely a much better companion. I'd rather go on a cruise with Christopher Walken than
a walk with
Tom Cruise.
That's not in the question, is it?
No.
And there's no joy in that. There's no pun joy in that. Here I am on a cruise with Christopher Walken. That's not a pun.
Just interesting, though.
Interesting, yeah.
If you had to choose any Hollywood star to go on a cruise with, who would it be? I bet a lot of people would say Tom Cruise if you just asked.
Well, just by association.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just if you ask that question cold.
Which Hollywood star? It's like that Darren Brown suggestible thing. Which Hollywood star would you like to go on a cruise with? Tom Cruise. Why have I said that? I don't know.
Written on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Well...
Thank you. I don't think
we can top that.
No, we can't top the small laughs that accompanied the Tom Cruise, Christopher Walken bit.
That's good.
Can I go on a cruise with Natalie Portman? Thank you for the yes. That's a big yes from Natalie in the audience.
Because of portholes. Because of portholes.
Yeah. Can I go on a cruise with Natalie Starboard? That's shit. Please stop this gig.
Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for David Baddiel.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Come back next week. We're here with No Such Thing as a Fish and Izzy Sooty. So please come back. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Goodbye.
You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Rich Herring, and my guest, David Baddiel. The music's by Scant Regard. Thank you very much to the Clapham Grand for having us. Thank you to everyone who came to see us. I am indebted also to my producer, Ben Walker. I'm indebted to my friend and director, Chris Evans, not that one. I'm very indebted to Kathleen McKeegan from Rahalastapa, rahalastapa.com, for her fantastic research into previous episodes of this show. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Please become a monthly badger, gofasterstripe.com/badges. £3 a month or more if you want, and you get lots and lots of extras, including bonus videos. But most importantly, you get to know who the guests are ahead of everyone else, so you can buy tickets to the show and before everyone else. You get a priority access. I don't know if that's most important. Most important, you are providing us with cash to make more podcasts. So your money, like 75p a podcast, if you're just counting Rahalastapa, That money goes into making even more entertainment for you. Isn't that a wonderful, wonderful system? GoFasterStripe.com/badges if you want to be part of the gang.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Richard Herring download and book needs. Go to RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.